thank you, choir. They're about half down this morning, so I think they did a great job. Speaking a while ago about our Bible reading, our January Bible study book, which is the letter to the Ephesians, I will start previewing that Wednesday night, and then on Wednesday and Sunday nights, I will teach the book of Ephesians, which is our January Bible study book. And I hope you will plan to be in on that too. In the third chapter of Philippians, in the scripture lesson that was read a few moments ago, I want us to take the title, Pressing Towards the Mark. Now, Paul is saying here in these verses that he is trying to grasp that for which he had been grasped by Jesus Christ. And you know, that's a wonderful thought. For you and I to find out, first of all, what it's all about in our lives, and then that we would live and work and do that we might grasp that and be that. Paul felt that when he was stopped on the Damascus Road, that Jesus had a dream, a vision, and a purpose for which he had taken a hold of the life of Paul. And Paul felt then that all of his life he was bound to press on, lest he disappoint Jesus, lest he frustrate the dream and the purpose for which Jesus had grasped him. You know, every man is grasped by Jesus for some purpose. I think for every man, Jesus has a dream, a vision for each of our lives. And therefore, I hope this morning that maybe we can see through what Paul was trying to say, that you and I too must, all of our life as a Christian, press on so that we might realize that dream and that purpose for which Christ has saved us and what he wants to do in our lives. And so to that end, Paul says two things here. He makes it very clear that he had really not achieved everything, that he was not perfect, he had not arrived, he was not where he hoped to be later on. But he says, even though I count not myself to have achieved or to be completed, but he says, this one thing I do. I forget all of the past achievements now which are behind me. And this is to say, not that he forgot the past. He reminds himself in many places about what he was and who he was before Jesus came into his life. But what he's talking about here is that he will never use any task that he has achieved or any deed that he has done as an excuse for relaxation in the future. In effect, Paul is saying that the Christian must forget all that he has done in the past and remember only that which he still has to do. Therefore, he is saying that in the Christian life, for the Christian and the church, there is no room for a person or a church which desires just simply to rest on its laurels. I think maybe one of the most pathetic things I hear out of people sometimes, they have moved into our area. Maybe they've been here for 1, 3, 4, and 5 years and more. And this is the gist of their conversation. They say, well, Pastor, you know, in years gone by in the other church where we were. Well, I'm always happy to know what they did in the other church. That's a good starter. And they'll say, well, I used to be a deacon. I used to sing in a choir. And we used to do this and we used to do that. We used to work with the young people. We used to teach Sunday school class. Work with the RAs, the GAs, and the ACT teams. And we served on this committee and on that committee. And we were tithers and we were this and we were that. That's all great. But this is all a conversation. So now, what are you doing now? Why aren't you in the church now? If it was good for you then, why isn't it good for you now? And you know, this becomes a pathetic sign in the life of some Christians. They start then to live on the past and in the past. It's never the present and the future. And this is what Paul is dealing with here. Now, he had already accomplished a lot. He had already been on his missionary journeys. He had already started new churches. But he is saying, I have to put behind me now all of those past achievements. I must never let not one of those to be a cause for me now to relax and to say I don't have to discipline myself to push on and to work anymore. Dear friend, when you stop as a Christian in praying and studying, attending church and being involved, you're not going to rest. You're going to rust. You will not move forward. You will move backwards. You will become cold, and you will become indifferent, and you will become picky, and nothing will go right for you. Paul describes here, and you know, Paul was a very wise man. He captured a lot of the things that were going on in his day. And here, as he does in other places, use a different people. He describes something as an athlete here. And he is saying that just as an athlete is reaching out for that which is in front. And the word he uses here is for a runner who is out going hard down a track. He knows the goal line is up ahead. And he knows there's the tape stretched across the line. And so he describes this as a picture of a runner who is forgetting everything in the back. And he just has one thing in mind. And that is, his eyes are on the goal line. And with his body, his hands, everything of his body is lurched forward, moving ahead to the goal line. That is the thing he has in mind. And so Paul is saying something of the same thing, that I have to put my whole life and move ahead. He says, I haven't achieved yet, but I see the goal, I see the prize of my high calling, and I know that I am going to attain in the resurrection of my Lord, because one day I'm going to be with him. I can see heaven in the distance. I can see Jesus in the distance. And he says, this is what I'm pressing on for. And regardless of what they do to my life, I will never stop. I will never relax. I will keep pressing on to the mark. So this is the thrust that Paul brings out of this message. And so it seems that maybe he was speaking to a group of antinomians. Now, these were people who denied that there was any law at all in the Christian life. They declared that they were in the grace of God, and that therefore it really didn't matter what they did. God would forgive. They were safe. And they really didn't need any further discipline and further effort in their lives. But Paul is insisting that to the end of the day, the Christian is the life of an athlete pressing towards on to the goal, to the finish line. And that the Christian must never relax. He must never relax in his efforts or lower his standards, but to press on towards the goal unto the end. Now then, when we get this thought in mind, we come to see then that you're not going to be able to do this by just trying to live a carefree, nonchalant type Christian life. There has to be that word commitment involved. And with this in mind, and we come now to the first Sunday of a brand new year, I think we have to see certain things. as we have been given the privilege now to live through another year and to see a new one, to start another decade. You know, it's a joy to be able to come to another new decade and another new year. A lot of people didn't make it this far. And I always count it a joy when God leads me to another year, another new opportunity. It's like making a fresh start all over again and seeing how much more you can do this year than you didn't do last year. So then I think, as a church, first of all, we want to do all we can. But you know, we have to see what is top priority. What's the main business of the church? What are we trying to do here anyway? My dear friend, our main business is people business. We are in the people business here. Why? This was the main business of Jesus. Does not the Bible teach us that the Son of Man came to seek and to save that which was lost? That was top priority to Jesus. In his personal ministry, the main emphasis was on winning souls, saving people, letting them experience that new life that he only was able to give. When he taught his disciples, trained them, it was all for the purpose mainly of reaching out to people, salvation of souls. When he empowered the church there on the day of Pentecost, why was all of that power given? Why were they given that burst of new strength that they had never had before? Was it just to jump up and down and shout and see how much noise they could make? It was all for one reason. It was to be used to go out and to lead souls to Jesus Christ. That was first. That was important. And so people business must be the main thrust of our church. And our program must be planned and organized with this in mind, and with every goal that we set, it has to do with reaching and teaching and training and ministering to people. But we have to reach them for Jesus first. And so as I start this new year, I'm praying, planning, and committing myself, first of all, to a deeper study, that we may have a greater pulpit ministry this year. Then that we may build a more effective Bible teaching program through the Sunday school. That our teachers may be better trained. That they may know more about the Bible themselves. And that they may know just what's the best method to get the Bible message across. I dedicate myself that we may have a more effective outreach program in our church that will involve more people than ever before. That we may reach out in a greater way through visitation than we have ever done before. That we may become more effective. Then that we may have a more meaningful youth program. I'm concerned, and I tell you, while I was away for this past month, I had a lot of time on different occasions to look back and to meditate on our operation here. Everybody is important in the church. The adults are important. The youth are important. And we have to be more than just concerned about recreation. You know, the church is not here just to make people happy. It's to really get them motivated to serve the Lord. We're not just here to have parties and games, but our youth need to be taught about the depths of Christianity. And they need to be able to have the strength to stand up as dedicated youth and say no to the voices of evil. And they need to be able to stand up and know that they stand for something, and that it does make a difference about how you live and what you do and what you say and where you go. And I'm hoping that our youth program will become more meaningful, that our young people will grow and learn and be, that when they become to be the leaders in the days ahead, they will be strong, devoted leaders of Jesus Christ. And then to work with our church and Sunday school leaders, that they may be more effective in carrying out their jobs, to develop a more effective music minister in our program, that when the choirs will be up to their maximum limit, and when it will be, as it should be, a vital part of worship and the church program, I dedicate myself that we might strengthen our stewardship program, that people may realize more and more the responsibilities of undergirding the church with their love and their time and their talents as well as their money. And then to strengthen our building program, that we may move on towards the erection of our new sanctuary. And then I would like for us to work towards these goals as a church, that we may have increases in our worship services, to have a more effective midweek prayer service, that our people may realize the strength, the need of more of a togetherness in prayer, that we may have a weekly attendance in Sunday school of over 500, that we may get back again to having over 150 in church training, that we again may have over 200 study course awards earned by our people, that this year that we might baptize at least 100 new converts. Year before last, we got 62. This last year, 73. I think we ought to reach 100 this year. And for some of you who have not been in the church very long, our facilities are already here to meet these needs. When we erected the last new educational unit, we have space available now to take care of over 1,000 in Sunday school and attendance. And so God has given us the facilities. He's given us the space and everything to work with. The thing we need to talk about today is not where the people are, or do you have space, which is a problem of so many churches, but we need to talk about that word commitment. And so I'm asking you this day to commit yourself to Jesus Christ as never before, that we may launch out into the deep this year and start pressing on towards the mark for this prize of our high calling in Jesus. I tell you, we have no need to even set and dream and expect to win spiritual victories in your life, in your classroom, in your department, unless we are committed wholly to Jesus Christ, because He is the only one who can give us the victory. You know, your life will never grow and expand for Jesus unless you commit yourself unto Him. He has to come first, and when you do, God will bless you in a wonderful way. And so we see that there is this real need. And you know, here in America, we have it so easy. We have it so good. And there's no reason for our church not reaching out, because no one is saying no to us. There's no government pressure about our worship, about our witnessing, about our winning souls. And for the first time in my ministry, even though I've been in other countries where there was tension and all, I was not there so much to preach and to win souls as I was in India. And for the first time in my life, I found myself preaching where the government officials did not want any preaching going on. I found myself surrounded with communism and Hinduism, that they were in control, that I was in the extreme minority, and they didn't want to hear the minority voice. And so I could feel and I could see, and I knew the tension was all around. And yet I could see God working in the midst of lives of dedicated Christians who would not cease to lift their voice for Jesus Christ. And because of the increase in political tension in India, we were not allowed to have outside air services. They had to be either enclosed in the compound of the church or the hospital or the school, or else they had to be indoors. And yet, God blessed. You see, the officials in India say that you cannot preach Christianity, you cannot preach and teach the people anything by force or by enticement. What does that mean to us as Christians? It means that they say no to your preaching on hell because that's force. If you preach on heaven, that's enticement. You are enticing people to become a Christian because you're talking about all the good things of heaven. But even in the face of tension, God blesses. And even as he blessed in the life of the Apostle Paul, he lived a life of tension. He was in and out of jail all the time. And I came face to face with people who have had the same experiences. I will share more of those with you tonight. But let me tell you of a service there one night. While we were there, everywhere we got the opportunity, we went and we preached and we witnessed. We didn't pass up a thing. Some of the boys preached at a Chinese church. We preached at all different kind of churches. We went to the hospitals. Everywhere. And one night they said that the Catholic Church of Guwahati wants some of y'all to come over there and preach to them if you're not in this other evangelistic service. And so three of us went. And then we still got back time for the end of the other service. And here's the Catholic Church of Guwahati with a school of nearly 1,000 in their school. They invited us in. We went in there. They always give you a lot of food and stuff that you don't need. And they drink more tea over there than anywhere I've ever seen. I was supposed to speak one afternoon at 4 o'clock to a group. And it was 10 minutes to 4. And the pastor said, well, they have tea ready down for us over here. And I looked at my watch. I said, well, now, brother, the service is supposed to start at 4 o'clock. What are we going to do about that? He said, well, the tea is ready. He said, the tea can't wait. Service can wait. All right, you're the boss. So we went, and I don't reckon the 15 minutes delay hurt us any. We had good service anyway. But they still have that old English thing. You know, the British used to have India. So I tell you, morning, noon, and night, they have tea, and whether you want it or not. But we went to this service, and they had tea and all types of food, and we finished it up, and that was a businessman who was executive for a tea plantation, and I suppose they had about 25,000 acres of tea gardens, which is one of the large production in India, along with rice. And he came in and said, you know, the tension is building up on the streets. They're getting ready to impose a curfew, and that means that no traffic moves. He said they're also confiscating Jeeps, and we had come over in the Jeep from the Baptist church that they use in their school and all. So he said, I don't know about the service. Well, we finished what we were doing there, and we decided we were there, and the two little Catholic fathers said, well, if you all want to, we'll have service anyway. I said, let's have it. So we went into the chapel, and a lot of people didn't come because they were fearful to get on the streets. But we went in there, and several hundred people had showed up anyway. And so the father had their prayers and introduction, and they turned it over to us. And we took over and we gave testimony. We preached the word to them. And I think we had as good a reception as we had the whole time, especially from an outside group. We told them about Jesus, and we had a commitment of many of them who not only raised their hand but stood to let you know that they had been born again and they believed in Jesus Christ as their Lord and their Savior. And I tell you, the Lord got in the midst of that service. And Jesus was really lifted up. When we got to the end, I had everyone to stand. I said, I work these same methods, you know, I work back home. So I had everybody to get together and join hands. And I could see them reluctantly doing this, but we did it anyway. And all the smiles. And then I had us to sing something that they knew. And then I had one of our brothers to lead us in a closing prayer of dedication and thanksgiving to God for what we had been able to do that night, even while just less than 50 yards away on the street. The police and the military folks were all over the streets. But we forgot that there was tension on the outside for just a little while. And when we finished praying, I've never seen so much handshaking and smiles. And this little Catholic priest that was about this high was holding my hand. I thought he was going to grip my hand off while we were praying. And then it turned around there, and just about both of us in a spontaneous manner just embraced each other and hugged each other and kissed each other on the cheek. And I thought, my, I had to come all the way to India to get hugged and kissed by a Catholic priest. And then he said, we're not going to let y'all go in your Jeep because they may take it and then you would be stranded. He brought his private car, put us in there. One of the boys from Burma was with us. He was not supposed to be there. We put him in the floor and he drove us to the Baptist church compound and we made it back. But he did that on his own. He said, they won't stop me. That's the service we had there. You know, they insist there on the new birth. Now, I'll talk more about this later. Not just being a Christian. And I'll explain later why. But there is an insistence on the new birth. And I think we have to insist on that. If you're going to be committed, then you have to be born again. I close with this thought. And later I will show you the pictures of these two young men. But we had in our seminar up in the Northeast, two young men from Burma. One's name was Zam and one's name was Vung. And I'm glad I've got their pictures to show you. But every day we had different testimonies from the young pastors and evangelists because a lot of the others had not met them even as we had not met them. And these two young men in their 20s who told about their conversion experience, what they used to be as Hindus, and how they dedicated their lives to Jesus. And Sunday night week, I will show you their pictures and give you more of their story, but I just want to share with you right now this part, because I think it has to do with our commitment. And I tell you, it really challenged my commitment to tears. I watched this young man stand there that morning after we had tea together. He told about his experience. And then he told about he and his young friend coming out of Burma. He said, we walked 200 miles through the jungles of Burma, barefooted. Not down the roads. We came through some villages where still naked people live. We came through some where there were hostile tribes. We came through some where they were still in the head shrinking business. And we had to stay on the outskirts. We slept in the jungle every night. It took us a week to walk those 200 miles. And then we got to the Burmese and India border, and we slipped across at night because we had no permit or no visa to come into India. They would not let us have one, even though we had applied. And then they walked and took a chance on a bus and finally got through Manipur and up into Guwahati. The whole time they were there, they had a badge on that didn't say Burma, but it said India, so that no one would suspect anything. They really were not to be there. But when Zam began to tell his story, I tell you, the more he talked, when he says we walked, he said some of the people would not even let us come into their outside kitchen and cook our rice and our food. We had to eat a lot of our food raw because they turned us off. But he says, we walked and we came this far just so we could come to this seminar and have this fellowship and learn more about how to be a better servant for Jesus Christ. That's how committed these two young evangelists really were. And they were only saved back in 1974. But when they gave their lives to Jesus, they, like the Apostle Paul, gave all of it. And they were committed to their people. And they would again walk back and cross the border back into Burma when it was all over. But as this young man stood there and told his story, when he finished, I don't mind telling you, he had every one of us in tears. It was one of the most moving experiences that I had while I was there. And then to think about my own commitment, what a challenge he gave to me, of what he has given up, what he has gone without. He didn't even have a coat to wear. He didn't get in his shoes until he got up into Guwahati. This is what he was able to do, though, with what he did have. And we complain so much. What about our commitment today? What will we do for Jesus? Isn't it a shame that some people say, I can't go to church, I have the headache, I have company, I have this, the temperature is not right, I don't have any clothes, I've never seen so many excuses in my life. What will we do with our commitment today? We have a hymn that I'm going to ask Helen to play after a while, about putting your all on the altar for Jesus Christ. And I'm going to ask you this morning, as we start out on this first year, first of all, to think about your own commitment. Now, the first part of this invitation is to Christians. I'll get around to the lost people later on. I'm concerned about the church people right now. And I'm going to ask you that if you feel that you want to commit your life to Jesus Christ, that you might be all that he wants you to be this year, and that you be willing to commit your life into becoming involved in your church, to be in attendance in the services, to be a praying person, to be a Bible reading and studying person, to be a part of the financial program, to be a part of the church operation, and then in a climax, that you will commit yourself with these other things, that you will try to win at least one soul to Jesus Christ this year with his help, that you will try to let your life be used to win at least one unto the Lord. I want you to think about those things now as we stand quietly for prayer and as Helen begins praying. Will you stand and will you bow your head in prayer?